So you blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's no good for you. It's cold, doesn't write. It's not nearly as much fun to wake up to.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Scalpels and Tequila, a Grey's Anatomy recap podcast. I'm Ayla.
And I'm Tamsin. And today we're doing season 5, episode 12. Episode 12, Sympathy for the Devil. The Sympathy for the Devil song.
What a great title for a song. So I want to say a couple of quick apologies. One, both of us realized that we had completely forgotten that this is a three-part episode, which rolls on to apology number two, that we have made you wait an extra week for the second part of this episode.
Completely forgot. I don't even think we mentioned it. Like, oh, no, we did, but not yet. The three-part thing. Completely forgot.
I thought it was a two-part thing. No, it's a three-part thing. We've got to the end of this episode and I went, huh, three-parter.
Yeah, pretty rare to have the three-parters going on.
Yeah, apologies for the big delay in season, team. We have been doing really well at making sure that we have episodes backed up and ready to go. But unfortunately, the last 3 weeks have been a bit tumultuous for the both of us.
Yes.
I went away to my work conference, and we'll have you all know that I won an award. And we'll, probably have a delay in September because I get to go to Scotland for 2 weeks on work. But the other thing that I got from conference was COVID. Really bad batch of COVID, and couldn't talk and couldn't breathe properly. So, yeah, thank you all so much for your patience and your understanding. And let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get right in. So, as usual, we are starting this episode with Meredith's monologue. And it goes a little bit like this. My mother used to say this about residency. It takes a year to learn how to cut. It takes a lifetime to learn not to. Of all the tools on the surgical tray, sound judgment is the trickiest one to master. And without it, we are all just toddlers running around with 10 blades. We're human. We make mistakes. We misestimate. We call it wrong. But when a surgeon makes a bad judgment call, it's not as simple. People get hurt. They bleed. So we struggle over every stitch, we agonize over every suture, because the snap judgments, the one that come to us quickly and easily without hesitation, they're the ones that haunt us forever.
I feel like Arizona is just preaching to the choir in this episode.
I'm so glad we have her. I love her so much. And I think I forgot how instantly I love her as well, because so often on this show, especially when we're introduced to new characters, we're almost like, oh, do we need to meet another person? We're, you know, we're so invested in the ones we already have. It's sometimes a struggle to like want to be invested in someone new, but instantly right off the bat, I think the way they, the way they introduce us to Arizona and straight away her like morals and her values and the way she articulates herself. I love her instantly.
She's also the first female character upon rewatch who has been introduced to this show who isn't instantaneously demonized. Like so many of the female characters that have come on, we've turned around and be like, why did I hate this person?
That's so true.
And I never have a memory of hating Arizona when she first came in.
No.
Like, not at all. I think that there was a bit of a twinge of, oh, you're being disrespectful to Bailey. That's not going to end well. But
really a twinge because I think it's pretty quick. We go, oh, Bailey is in the wrong.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you get a twinge of, like, oh, butt hurt. Someone's being mean to Bailey. But she states her case so clearly. And her and Bailey should get along like a house on fire.
Yeah.
Because she really does. When speaking to Bailey, just go straight to the medicine. She isn't fluffing around. There's no fluff. There's no personal stuff. It's just, here's the medicine. Here is what we are going to do. Let's do it.
She's so professional and not in a cold way. I feel like a lot of the time we see these characters that they write on the show, the more kind of professional and straight to the point and straight down the line they end up turning a little bit cold. And Arizona's
and women are not allowed to be direct.
No. And we have such great conversations with Arizona today where she really explains where she's coming from. And she's so clear and to the point, and it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's great. And that's actually where we open up this episode. We open this episode back in Jackson's room, Bailey desperately trying to come up with options to save him and help him, to the point where she has texted Arizona at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, she paged her. It's not even a text back then. It's a legit hospital. It's a pager.
And to come in and check on this kid. And I love how honest Arizona is about the brutality of working in peds.
Totally.
You know, Bailey saying that he's running out of time. And she's like, they always are. Welcome to peds. And she does exactly the same thing with Alex later. But the openings of this episode, I thoroughly enjoyed. But I have questions.
Oh, hit me.
Well, our other opening is we are in some dank fucking attic with
Did you say addict? Mark. Attic?
Attic.
Yes.
With Mark topless, Lexi doe-eyed and naked in a bed. And he's complaining about how long she is going to live in Meredith's attic. And I'm like, wait, what happened to her in George's apartment?
I think our memories are just a bit fucked today. I feel like we know that they stopped living together.
No, I know they had a little fight, but he came home and there was mac and cheese.
Yeah, true.
Like, why, what, when, how, and why would you bring Mark there? Because everyone, all of our friends, Sadie is still sleeping on the couch. Alex lived there. Izzy lives there. Denny's hanging around.
It's Meredith everyone's home. Everybody lives there. Comatose
on the couch because Mama Derek is coming to town.
Mama now, would Derek. You be
the Meredith or the Izzy in this situation? Are you someone that the families love?
It's interesting because I definitely do not go all the Izzy way. I think it's hard because I'm not fully Izzy in that regard. But I would never do what Meredith did and try and be somebody that I'm not either.
Well, this kind of leads to my other question. She says that Mama Derek is coming to stay at their house. Where? The couch has someone sleeping on it.
Yeah, totally. And you go, oh, if there was a spare room, wouldn't that be where Sadie is?
In the attic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Look, she's pretty down to earth. I think that's the idea that they're trying to make us see her as, because this, she comes to town, she rocks up straight to the hospital and Derek is like, oh, I organized a big car for you. And she's like, nah, just took the bus. I can just take the bus. It's fine.
I like mum. Mum's good. But
mostly mum's good. We will come back to mum.
We'll come back to mum. But we also come back to our prisoner, Mr. Dunn, and his brain contusions are expanding, which means basically he's going to die. He has 5 days until he is killed by the state. And he doesn't want to die there. He's trying to refuse the surgery. And there are just some really good lines in this episode. Like,
you can
fix a broken television before you throw it out.
Exactly.
And he spends our episode sort of understanding that Meredith has empathy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because it seems like he sort of does want to comfort her because she's probably one of the first people to show him any empathy in a really long time. So he keeps trying to justify his actions by saying, you know, if I said this, does it make you sleep better at night? Whatever helps you sleep at night?
I mean, that line, the whatever helps you sleep at night, it's like a weird mixture of comforting, sinister,
condescending,
and manipulative. Condescending is the perfect.
Like, if he didn't say that, it would be fine. But, like, you're also playing with and lying to the one person who's kind of on your side here.
But this is just adding to all of the reasons that we are not supposed to like this character. This is, again, taking away any kind of redeeming qualities we're meant to feel for him, because as the audience, we are put in this position of, like, how do we feel? This huge kind of moral conversation about this position, this, and it's the getting too close to a patient versus just doing your job, and where and how to make sure you're not crossing that line. We did talk about this idea that we see the polar opposite scenarios of this. We see Bailey getting too close to a patient and giving them special treatment, and we see Derek hating a patient so much that he doesn't want to give him treatment at all, that he almost wants to do treatment against the patient's will now.
Well, he does. The patient has denied surgery, and his response was, only takes two doctors to sign off on this when you are no longer conscious.
Yeah, which is horrific.
Malicious.
Mm.
And then we get further moral gray thrown in there when a cute little Jackson, who is desperately in need of a new liver and intestines, has turned a lovely shade of yellow, is being wheeled through the hospital by Dr. Bailey. And he sees Mr. Dunn lying in the bed with the handcuffs on. He's like, oh, what did you do? And I love that Mr. Dunn says traffic violations.
So do I.
But basically Mr. Dunn says to him, you need organs. Do you want some of mine? And the next line we get out of Jackson says, why can't I have that nice man's organs? Like, he's like, why couldn't I have a candy bar at the concession stand?
I really, really do love the...
with childlike naivety.
Well, just the whole moral conversation that this episode is letting the viewers kind of have this internal struggle about. I just think it's very clever.
There are so many rules that get bent in the Grey's Anatomy universe to benefit a patient. And this is a rule that would guarantee a directed organ transplant to a tiny human.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing.
But Jackson is on the transplant list. He's at the top. They have hours, maybe days, to find him new organs. And as Bailey and Arizona are having it out, and I love seeing someone stand up to Bailey in this way, Alex is standing at the door telling them to respectfully shut up. So he can tell them that we have organs, we just have to go get them. So they have an entire private plane. But Alex and Arizona sit right next to each other. And Arizona doesn't like flying. So she fills the space with her charm and her whimsy and asking all of the questions
about relationships and rainbows and crap, in Alex's words.
Mm-hmm.
I also, for everyone who has, and I, look, honestly, I do know most of you have watched the whole season. This fucking scene where Arizona says she does not like to fly made me sick and sad. Right. It is an unintentional Chekhov's gun. She says, I hate flying. I always feel much closer to death in a plane than in an OR.
That's not this season.
No. They wrote these seasons and seasons earlier. They wouldn't have even known what they were writing.
But maybe they did.
Fuck, maybe they did. It gave me shivers. I was like, God, I wouldn't have thought about, like, I didn't think, I, you know, can't remember every single conversation. I didn't think about that, but watching that was, ugh.
I did the same though. But they get to the hospital and they find out that it's a kid they're harvesting these organs from. And Alex takes it really harshly. So when they're back in the plane in Arizona, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? And he just doesn't understand. He doesn't, I think, have the emotional range to see what she's doing. And he just confronts her and says, you don't care that we took organs from a little kid. What's wrong with you? Yeah. And I love how clearly and quote-unquote unemotionally she explains this to him, and it's, I think,
beautiful
the way she does it is really important, especially as we say this show is very much a product of its time. If there were to be emotions involved, we know that the male characters would have perceived that as weakness. So she goes on to say, that she knows what happened. She gets it. She knows about the tiny coffins. But she needs to talk about relationships and rainbows and crap and making plans for the future, because you have to turn your back on the tiny coffins and face forward to the next kid that needs your help. And it's this episode just gives such a clear picture of who Arizona is so quickly.
It's summed up so beautifully. And you're so right about, yeah, normally we would see, especially product of its time-wise, and a character like Alex, who we see his soft, gentle side with the tiny humans often, but he doesn't show it very much. And he's having such a struggle, an emotional time sitting in that plane. He's feeling so much. And for him to say to, you know, the woman next to him, I'm not trying to gender stereotype, but that does play a massive part in this conversation. He's saying, you don't care. You don't understand that was a kid. And she is his superior and older than him and works with kids. Like, she is a peds surgeon. This is her specialty. Of course she understands. And it's not that she's gotten so far into her career that she's become cold. It's she's found a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Alex gets this moment where he learns something. And it's so good. It's so good. I think this is my favorite scene in this episode.
Yeah, this is my favorite scene. I really liked the scene. And then the one thing that we haven't spoken about in this whole storyline is Sadie and Bailey.
Yes.
Sadie has a moment.
Also, he's still here, by the way.
Yeah. But she has a moment with Jackson's mother where Jackson's mom is like really worried that they're not going to get the organs in time. And, you know, she says something that was maybe a bit out of line, but was just trying to give her some hope. Like, even Jackson says, please tell my mother something good today, even if nothing good happens. She needs it.
Another beautiful line.
Yeah. And Sadie says, you know, she's like, oh, we're going to get the organs in time. And Sadie says, look, he's at the top of the list. There's every likelihood that it's going to happen. She doesn't make any promises.
Yeah.
She doesn't make any guarantees. But Bailey just about faces on her and says, I do not trust you. I do not like you. You will stay out of my way. You will do exactly what I tell you to do. You will not speak to another patient, and you will raise your hand and wait to be called on if you want to say anything.
The unprofessionalism that Bailey is displaying today is so hard to watch, especially coming from a character like Bailey, who we as audience trust. Like, we've been given so much trust in Bailey, like trust that she always has kind of everyone.
Everyone's back.
Everyone's back. And, like, she's always doing stuff for the good of her patients and always doing stuff for, like, the progression of the hospital and the teaching of the next generation. And for her to just be so single-minded and, like, have her blinders on just for this kid that kind of everything else is fading away is hard to watch, and it's also really confusing. Like, I really wish they gave us a little bit more background into the history of Bailey and this kid, because this kid, you know, appeared last week and all of a sudden she's like, this is the most important kid in the world.
Mm. If this was Tucker, I think I might understand it more.
Even if there was a scene at the start where, you know, we learned that Tucker and him are the same age or something. Like, there's something.
Yeah.
We have a moment with, I know there's lots of moments with Bailey and the kid, lots of moments with Bailey and the mum, but there's no one big moment that really, really shows us why this kid is so different in Bailey's eyes.
I agree. And this is probably one of the very first times that we've seen a subordinate actually, pun unintended, put their hand up and speak up about the fact that they are not being treated in a professionally okay way, and it's dismissed, and it's kind of like, wow, I hate that I'm siding with Sadie, but this is workplace bullying.
Yeah.
And it does kind of come back to bite Bailey in the ass, because once we get the organs and we get into surgery, everyone's chuffed, it's going well. And she's standing in the corner with her hand raised for a minute and then begs them, like, call on me, and points out this black spot. And very, very quickly, our organs start to die. And there's no option. They have to close him up and wait for a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I think that another surgeon who is just like Bailey, letting his emotions take hold of him, is, like you said before, Derek.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really touch too much on Derek's past. It's mentioned a little bit by his mum. But
and he told Meredith last week.
He told Meredith last week, but this week.
Remember? And she was so emotionally caring about it. She cared so much. She was so there to hear about how his dad got shot in front of him. She cared. She was, and then he was like, I'm so sorry. I'll dance for you to make you feel better.
Yeah. And now he's also going out of his way to. Is he going out of his way? I think he might be getting his comeuppance on Meredith, because I haven't seen him do sweet fuck all to reassure her that meeting his mum is okay. And he also hasn't had the debrief with mum of, hey, here are some topics that make my partner uncomfortable. Yes. And I feel like this isn't the first time we've had this conversation about pre-warning a friend or a family member about things they need to be wary of. I feel like if Meredith was important enough to meet your mum, you would have been like, hey, mum, I'm dating this girl. Her name's Meredith. She is Ellis Gray's daughter. Here is some backstory.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for anyone who is watching the video of this, you will see that I have a delightfully high ponytail, which is absolutely giving me a headache.
Ayla is in theme and I'm living for it.
Meredith, like I said before, is comatose on the couch when Derek walks in, so obviously knows that she's been in this heightened state of anxiety for a very long time.
Mm.
When he gets to the hospital, she is wearing a deranged high ponytail and does nothing to be like, hey, here's what my mum's like. Here are the kind of questions she's going to ask. He went through the introductions with Addison's and, you know, the decades that he was bringing girls home for.
Why is it up to Meredith
to change everything about herself?
Impress and do all of this extra emotional, uncomfortable shit and change herself and act a different way. Why is it up to Meredith to make Derek's mum comfortable? Where is Derek's part in making them both comfortable? Where is Derek's part in the actual introduction? In the, like, this is the woman I am in love with. This is the woman I left Addison for base, kind of. This is the woman that I chased around the hospital for years until she fell in love with me. This is the woman that I want to be with. Why does he not have to do anything?
Why is this all happening in their workplace?
Oh, yeah. That's
like, I get it. You want to get yourself into town. Cute. Come to the hospital, say hi, grab the keys. Here's the address. Go make yourself at home. We'll see you for dinner.
I mean, yes, totally that. But do you know, actually, we have seen so many of these meet the parent scenes in the hospital. It always happens in the hospital.
So it always does.
It always does. I think it's just part of the show's story. Like,
yeah,
it always happens in the hospital. But agreed, like, in real life, that seems wildly inappropriate. They're in the cafeteria where people are watching them.
What are they eating?
Meatloaf. Pot roast. Yep.
Weird.
Also, like, we've never seen that in the cafeteria. Like, where did that come from?
No, they have salads and sandwiches they don't eat. But there's so much happening in the cafeteria today. Like, Lexi has decided that there is a new rule that if you sleep with me, you have to have lunch with me.
I mean, and then, fair enough.
I agree.
I actually am really proud of her for doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's been spending the night with him. So there's a tram going past him. I'm shushing myself, not you, sorry. She's been spending the night with him quite a bit. I mean, he was at her house last night. Are they just going
and
to ignore
his
each other
at coming
work?
To town as well.
I've been in that situation Derek's. Where I've had to ignore people at work that I was seeing and had to act like we were nothing. And it fucking sucks. And I'm actually so proud of her, and I wish I'd had the courage back then to do what she did.
But, like, there's nothing non-platonic about what she did either, like they're colleagues. Being weird about it is what makes it weird.
Yeah.
And I love that they're in the cafeteria. She sat with him, and then all the interns take free range and they come in and they are absolutely being children.
Oh, my God, there's tater tots. Oh, my God.
And this is the perfect moment for Derek's mum, the woman who Mark says basically raised him, to bump into Mark and just watch him completely dissolve and lose all of Mark's pretense and be like, "Hi, Mum. I'm sleeping with that girl over there." Which one? The one with the sippy box? The one with the juice box?
You know how we've talked before about the way that when Meredith's mother used to come into the hospital, she would just turn back into the child?
Yes.
This is what we're seeing in Mark.
Exactly. Yeah. The same. And then you've just got fucking Izzy and Alex and George just watching Meredith. This is, haven't seen a great cafeteria scene like this one in a very long time.
The other thing we have to mention is that the complex dynamic here of Izzy and Christina watching Izzy, I mean, watching Meredith, because Izzy has Izzified Meredith. Like, Izzy did the high pony. Izzy was telling Meredith what to say. Izzy was like, "I'm the best. Mothers love me. Here's all the things."
Izzy was being dance mum when she first met Mrs. Derek, going, "Smile, smiles.
You're doing amazing, sweetie."
I really want to take this ponytail out, but I don't know if we've been funny enough for a YouTube, like a TikTok yet.
Yes, I understand. Izzy is watching Meredith like it's her creation that she's sent out into the world, and she's just making sure everything goes okay. Whereas Christina is watching Meredith like it's a car accident.
She's watching Meredith do all of the things that Christina felt like she was forced to do when she was meeting Mama Burke.
Oh my goodness. You've hit the nail on the head. And it's also Christina's watching Meredith in this way, I think, because they've been having this weird time. They're having this argument that you don't believe happened. They're having their, like, friendship fight. I feel like watching Meredith behave in this way that is so un-Meredith, that is so un-Christina, that is so un-everything that these two dark and twisty sisters bonded over, it must almost feel like she's losing her even more.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second.
She's,
it's like
turning someone that they both hated.
Yeah. Yeah, she's changing herself for a man. And we watched Christina do it and it didn't end well.
Totally.
Yeah. And then we get to the point where I suddenly lose the charm in Mrs.
Of Mama Trump. Derek? Yes.
She sees Lexi and she immediately walks up to her and puts her hands on either side of her face. So immediately fucking terrifying.
Terrifying. Like,
why
this
are you
is
touching me?
And
she doesn't say who she is.
Amazingly, and thank God Lexi knows, because Lexi sees her walking towards her and says, like, "Oh, you're looking for Derek? I can point you, like, who are you?" And then her face is grabbed and she's like, hands on my face.
And then
boundaries. That, why are you
The questions. Are you a good girl? I don't need you to be perfect, but are you a good girl? And we're like, okay, I need more parameters of that. How many sexual partners have you had?
Okay. One, inappropriate thing to ask anybody. Two, has no correlation to being good or not.
Because the next question is, do you have a criminal record? And I think that can potentially maybe sit in the good girl, bad girl section.
But again, though, you can't ask her this. She's not asking Meredith this stuff. You can't just ask people that.
You can't just ask people that.
Or you can't just ask people why you're white. Yeah.
Yeah, very uncomfortable. Didn't like it. No, thank you.
What I do find interesting about that, though, is how it does show, like, obviously, doesn't take away from how inappropriate it is. It does show how much Mama Derek cares about Mark.
Yes, I agree. Because then she goes to Mark.
Because we hear Mark talk about how much this woman means to him. So for her to show this much interest, I'm saying it weird because it feels weird because it was bad.
It was
interest, judgment, to show this much judgment on who Mark is.
She feels the need to give her tick of approval.
Yeah. At least we're like, oh, okay, like it's a relationship that goes both ways.
Yeah. But then when she does find Mark, she says she's a lovely girl and tells Mark that he has very low expectations for himself and that it's time to raise them. And Mark says, but she's just a kid. She's 25. And it's like, well, if you're feeling uncomfortable about it. Anywho, she validates this feeling, I suppose, by saying you have the emotional maturity of a 15-year-old. You need young. And I don't have problems with relationships with age gaps. But something about that sentence just screamed therapy.
It's not the age gap that's the issue here at all. They're both adults. If she was 18, I would have an issue with it. She's not. She's 24, I think she says.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's the fact that it's a given and a fact, and it's fine that a fully grown person has the emotional maturity of a 15-year-old.
Yes, and the advice isn't you need to step up, you need to learn. The advice is just date someone younger.
Date someone who doesn't know any better.
That's the problem here.
That's a big problem.
Not okay.
No, I understand
that this is supposed to be, we're supposed to find this funny, right? We're supposed to be like, ha, 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 Mark.
I think it's supposed to be another tick in the why they're perfect for each other column. And it's more of a, you've seen that like TikTok of the guy who's screaming, running through a forest with a full-size red flag, screaming, ma'am, ma'am, no, in response to videos. It's that. It's like the biggest red flag.
I just think, yeah. I also, there's something really, yeah, it doesn't sit right. And it has nothing to do with the age gap. It has everything to do with the fact that
he has the emotional length of a toothpick.
For your maturity. No one is the fix for anyone's behavior.
After a day of fighting between who she thinks Derek, after a day of difficult moral dilemmas with her patient, who simply wants to be able to die at the hospital so that his organs can go to a tiny human, and wearing an exceptionally tight ponytail to try and appease Derek's mother, Meredith has had enough. She tears the ponytail out, and Mrs. Shepherd comes up to, I suppose, say goodbye to her, and she kind of lets her have it, not in a vicious way, but is just brutally honest and says,
she's just like, hey, this is who I am. FYI.
Yeah, like, it's not that you seem like a nice person. No, you seem like a nice person and you've been very kind and it seems like you really want to like me. The pink and the ponytail, the smiling, the bright and shiny, it's all fake. I'm not the girl mothers like. I'm dark and I'm cloudy and I'm the kind of person that feels bad for serial killers. And, like, sometimes context, but she's too tired. You know, she's just had a conversation with our prisoner who basically asks her, tells her that in the state where they live, you get a choice between hanging or lethal injections and asks her, which would you choose medically speaking? And look, neither of them are good options. Hangings very seldom go correctly, to be honest with you. And recently, in the last couple of years, actually, there's been research done that states that the lethal injection is not necessarily pain-free.
That's interesting because, yeah, the way she describes it, and I really actually like the way Meredith answers that question.
Not medically.
It's medically. This is exactly the process your body that happens to your body at each one.
And that's got to be a rough conversation with someone who is looking down the barrel of that double shotgun. And she's not nasty or anything.
But I actually also think it's probably a conversation that no one's had with him.
Oh, I doubt that at all.
You don't doubt that?
Not for a second, no.
Yeah, I think.
Like if you were to be given full transparency, like I don't think hanging would be an option. As I said, it doesn't often go right.
Oh, it sounds horrific.
And you don't often get your neck broken and pass out.
It sounds horrific. It sounds just
It's grim. So she's coming off the back of that conversation and trying to figure out what the right thing to do in this situation is and having to deal with pleasantries and putting on a fake smile and masking your personality is too much. So she doesn't. And it turns out this is kind of what Mrs. Shepherd needs because the next time we see her, she's sitting outside with Derek and he gives her his father's ring.
Which is a family heirloom. Says, it's been passed down.
She says, I spent less than an hour with her, but I know enough. You see things in black and white and Meredith doesn't. Mm-hmm. You need her.
It's really sweet. I don't love the dig at Addison, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's not really a dig at Addison. She says Addison was clearly not right for you, which, true, we saw that. They didn't work together. They were, you know.
It did, but it was the tone.
It was the tone and it was the
and the kind clearly. Of
the
clearly.
I met Addison for, she'd known Addison for years and had never presented this ring. She meets Meredith for an hour and she's like, here you go. It does feel personal.
It does.
Doesn't it? It does feel a little bit personal.
We have a few other storylines today. Yes. We've got Chuck and Gary, and Chuck is short and angry, and Chuck went to Hong Kong to get a leg lengthening surgery.
Yes.
And when they get into fixing the massacre that is his shins, they say, it's like pudding in here.
Ew, I hate it.
Yeah. And basically this whole surgery, this whole storyline is just here so we can get some feeling out of Callie. When they're in surgery, she's explaining to Mark that she doesn't want to risk taking chances anymore.
Yeah.
Because she used to walk tall. And then came George. He took off an inch. Mm-hmm. Then Erica shaved off a few more. Mm-hmm. And all of that humiliation makes you shorter. Any more personal humiliation and it would cut me off at the knees. We haven't seen a lot of Callie grieving.
No, and it's something that I do feel like I try and bring up quite a bit to be like, hey, Remember that Callie's going through like a really hard time. She's been knocked down and knocked down and knocked down. George cheated on her, was horrific to her.
Mm-hmm.
Was
like, as was everybody else in the hospital.
Everybody else in the hospital. She had no ally. She was like completely isolated. She was homeless isolated. For a little bit. She was homeless for a little bit. She was living in the hospital. Mm-hmm. The whole George thing happened. You know, she almost had a fight in the cafeteria with Izzy. She was humiliated day after day.
The whole like sexual orientation reawakening happened and that just got thrown in her face.
Absolutely thrown in her face when Erica was like, well, you can't possibly like women and men. Bye.
Can't be half a lesbian. Ah.
And then she was like, well, you can. But then Erica disappeared not to come back after they had gone through such an emotional discovery within themselves, which, you know, having another person go through that with you, I'm sure you would form such an attachment and such a bond and kind of need that person.
Well, they're the only person you know who genuinely understands your feelings.
Yep. And also, like, her closest friend that we've ever seen her have that isn't Mark.
Yes. Ugh, it's so rough.
It's so rough. And I think it's so important that we are reminded of this.
Yep.
And I do like the analogy of walking tall versus feeling like people take something from you, but I don't like, I mean, it's just product of its time. It wouldn't be written today. I don't like that they're saying because of these things that have happened to her, it makes her feel short. Like, it's just the terminology around the word short being negative.
Yeah, I think see what you're saying.
People taking pieces from you or taking pieces of your confidence from you, and then the opposite of walking tall would be like slouching or slumping or feeling the need to shrink and take up more space because of confidence. Versus
proving our patient who feels like the whole world has been against him his whole life because he's short. Like, we're just kind of proving him right. I do like his brother's spiel at the end and the fact that they end it with, I'm just an asshole. Yeah, and you're short.
Totally. I do want to touch on it really briefly because I think me watching this today, right, seeing this guy constantly saying, I went there because for me, 2 inches is a lot. For me, that gives me something that I need. No one validating that. Everyone basically being like, that's silly. That's ridiculous. Your feelings don't matter. You don't understand. The world doesn't care.
Your struggles are irrelevant and they are non-existent.
Yeah. Felt really hard to watch. Felt really hard to watch because you can't, yes, it's dangerous for him to do that. Yes, it was really risky for him to go to another country and get this surgery. But does that not prove how much he, those feelings for him are so real and how it is affecting him mentally on a every single day basis? It's very, and again, his therapy.
His whole existence felt humiliating to him.
He was fixated, so intensely fixated on one thing that isn't something you can change, right? Imagine if like your whole life is fixated on this thing.
Any experience with it.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden there's a miracle cure. In his mind, he must have thought, there is this miracle thing that I can do that I never thought in my whole world possible. And because this thing that is affecting me every day, making me miserable, is something that I never thought I could change. All of a sudden there is something I can do about it. So he does it. Yes, it's dangerous. Yes, what his brother said after is actually true. But that he has some really real issues going on here about this. And I think for them not to have sent him to psych right now, for them not to have brought up or validated his feelings at all was really hard to watch.
Or acknowledge the fact that they just don't understand, because he says it a couple of times. He's like, you're what, 5'10"? You're 6 foot tall? Like,
yeah.
You do not understand
yeah.
the struggle that I've had.
Yeah, and it's I understand how people saying like, hey, that doesn't matter to me. Hey, that doesn't matter to me. You can say that to someone as many times as you like, but he can't hear it. He needs help. He has something going on mentally. It's like body dysmorphia. It probably is way more like it's something else. He actually needs help. And people constantly invalidating him is going to make him fixate on that more, because all of a sudden it's like his reality probably doesn't make any sense. Yes.
Yeah. It's being reaffirmed that like, yeah.
I found it really hard to watch and it was really sad.
Same.
It's really hard.
Not as hard to watch as the Denny this episode, though.
Totally. But again, like I do think what the brother says at the end is important.
Uh-huh.
I do think it was good, but I just think it was written today. Hopefully. It would have been done differently. Correct. Yeah. So Denny
is spending the day singing the praises? No. The practicalities? No. Denny's going, you know what's great? Having a ghost boyfriend. You don't have to meet the parents. You don't have to go on awkward dates, which we'll get to in a second. You don't have to do any of these things with a ghost boyfriend. How lucky are you? How great is this?
Yeah. He's absolutely failing to realize. I'm talking about him like he's real. He is failing to realize the most important thing for her is having an actual relationship. And all of those things are included in that package for her.
And Izzy sits Denny down. I wonder if he floats. And, you know, she says that she wants Denny alive. She wants to go on dates. She wants to meet her mother. She wants to go to a restaurant and not look like a crazy person for talking to herself. And she breaks up with Denny, I suppose, and says, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. As Alex walks in and says, hey, we have some holidays. Do you want to go on a little road trip to Iowa? Is that what your mum's from? That's where your mum's from.
Perfect timing, Alex. Alex is
perfect timing.
This is Alex turning away from the past and facing towards the future and talking about the rainbows and crap.
But unfortunately, Izzy's past is still there and we get this.
Would you say it's haunting her?
Ominous moment where Denny sits down next to Alex and says, we need to have a talk.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about dates.
So do I.
I have loved the forwardness and transparency that Owen has shown since day dot. Last episode, Christina went, boundary, no more hot and cold. I am not into this. I need to know what goes on. We both thoroughly agree that that was just her reaction.
A really incredible overarching theme that we have seen from all of our women today is them standing up for themselves and saying what they need. Izzy breaking up with Ghost Denny because he can't give her what she needs in this relationship.
Sadie going, this is ludicrous. What are you talking about?
Arizona saying, I actually know what I'm doing. This is how I get through my day. This is what I need from you, Alex. This is how I do the thing.
Christina, and also back off Bailey.
Christina, exactly what you were saying. She said, no more hot and cold. No, thank you. Lexi saying, if you sleep with me, you eat lunch with me. I'm not going to be a secret. I'm not going to be ignored. I exist.
Mm-hmm. Derek's mum saying, I don't need a car. I'm going to get the bus.
I love this.
Yeah, it's good.
Look at them go.
I will say, though, I think Christina saying that Owen is hot and cold because she interrupted him while he was working. Last episode,
it's not just been that, though. Remember
no,
when
it hasn't.
He – no. So they had the kiss and then he was real weird with her, kind of ignoring her. And, yes, we've talked about how sometimes men are just very simple and he's just totally working. He's just at work. He's just at work. That can be the truth, but I think also what she's saying here is communicate.
Yeah.
Because I think she would be perfectly fine with him saying, sorry, I'm not trying to be hot and cold. When I'm at work, that's all I can think about. As soon as I finish work, I'm thinking about you. Like that's, you know.
Oh, as soon as I finish work, all I'm thinking about is you?
I mean, that's a dream, isn't it? Isn't it? I think it's so kind for him to be like, I'm work focused. My day has started. I'm clocked in. Working time. Sorry, I'm not being chatty. I just need to work. But when I'm not working, this isn't me being hot and cold. This is genuinely me just not being able to multitask.
I like that he comes up to her and he asks her out on a date. And he specifically said, you said not to play hot and cold, and I would like to go on a date with you, which shows that he listens.
And also another layer of that for me is it shows that he's doing something that he finds hard, even though he hasn't said this is us reading into him, of mixing his personal life whilst working. And it is awkward.
Well,
but
I will
he did it
say
for her, and I like it.
This is the first start of a relationship that we have seen on this show, which wasn't
a secret.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. Like no one's ashamed of being with anyone.
Yes.
And like he's dating a subordinate. He potentially should be, but he's like, no, this is how we're doing it. And Izzy is just going straight into the overbearing Izzy. I think it's nice. What are you going to do? You only get a first date once. It should be fun and sexy. You need to ask good questions.
Totally gets into Christina's head about it. Mm-hmm. Because Christina's
but
fine.
Mrs. Derek also gets into Owen's head. They get introduced briefly, and we find out that Derek's mum was a Navy nurse for 25 years. And this
they
woman
instantly
is
have in, this rapport, as we see with everyone that's had anything to do with the army. It's like, Major Hunt, how are you? Major Hunt,
hello.
I'm nurse. It's like they all flip into this mode. It's so
to be honest,
to me. I think
when
because
I
we just
people,
are not connected to the army in the same way that America is, but it's like.
Yeah, but I can pick a bartender. I can pick someone who's worked in a hospo immediately.
Yeah, but you don't start talking to them differently.
No, but they do immediately find out each other's rank and appropriately change their tone.
Interesting.
But. The level of perception that Mrs. Derek has is nuts because she catches Owen on the way to the lift and she says, have you been sleeping? Because I use valerian root and I know it's hippy dippy, but you should give it a go.
Yeah.
And I think that his acting in this was really beautiful because you see that she's immediately hit a nerve and we're finding out more about Owen.
Kevin McKidd is a brilliantly detailed actor.
He is. It was the little, like, slight eye movements and the way that his shape kind of changed. It was great. And we see him arrive at Christina's door in a suit with a tie. Like, he's tried. There are flowers. And he opens the door. Oh, yeah. She opens the door and you're immediately like, oh, my God, more than the bare minimum. I love this. And that thought gets crushed when you realize that he's drunk. But it's not happy drunk. It's scared drunk. And he says, I haven't been on a date in 5 years and this is not what you deserve. And she's obviously angry. I'd be fucking pissed.
Yeah.
But she says, you need to go have a shower. You smell like a brewery. So he gets in the shower.
He just walks straight into her house and walks straight into the shower. And he, again, with Kevin McKidd's so good acting, it's so slight, but it's so real because he like is kind of, walks into her house. He's not overacting the drunkenness. He just kind of stumbles a little bit. He's like, oh, that's not the shower. And then he's going in.
Like, I've had so much experience with drunk people. And when he opened the door, I was like, oh, you're playing a drunk person real well.
Yeah, because drunk people try to not look drunk. And that is the key to acting. And I feel like actors who don't play drunk very well are playing the drunk. Whereas in real life, if you are drunk, you are playing the sober.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But he's so far past that. He has been so deeply triggered today that this is – he's not happy drunk. He's not fluffy drunk. He's not messy drunk. He is
reliving a horrific time. He is really trying to not think about the place that he has gone back. And she had taken some of Izzy's advice earlier. And very awkwardly, whilst talking to Owen about surgeries,
looking up at him with her big doe eyes.
So, what was your best surgery ever? Wait, don't. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Wait, no, ignore that. That was dumb. Okay, we're gonna go to charts.
It was the tone shift, the immediate tone shift.
So good.
And so she walks.
Peppy. What was your best like surgery ever? Is just not Christina.
No.
Ugh.
But seeing him fully clothed, saturated, just yanking at his tie. And he goes into this story about his best surgery ever. And it's very reminiscent of that person who you've only just met, or it's been an acquaintance you've bumped into a couple of times and you're out somewhere and they're like, ah, actually, I have this hilarious anecdote from my childhood. And they tell you and you're just like, that is not okay.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. We get this horrific story about a man who had been the victim of a homemade bomb that just filled him with holes, and Owen is the only one there. And he tried to cauterize veins and do things, but what he needed was pressure. And it meant that for 2 hours he had to lay on top of this person who was dying beneath him to save him.
Because the only thing big enough and heavy enough to plug all the holes was Owen's body.
It gets so much worse, though.
Yeah.
They save him, and months later he gets a note from him thanking him for saving his life, and this little spark of joy happens, and then he says, and then he shot himself the next day. What?
Yeah.
And Christina just breaks a little. All of the anger that she was feeling and the disappointment, and I'm sure she was also feeling like she'd made a huge mistake and that, again, she'd trust in some stupid man and this is how she's treated, and just hearing this story and realizing that, oh, this man is not being hot and cold. He doesn't know how to human because he is broken.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
What are moments in this episode where we should have called a psychiatrist?
Oh, definitely.
I think Owen would have actually done quite well with the psych that was treating Meredith.
Much better than Meredith.
Yeah, but like that woman was no bullshit, and I think Owen would have enjoyed seeing those two do therapy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harrowing. Horrible.
Harrowing. I think the difference between Owen telling Christina this story and someone in a bar getting way too personal with you is that Christina really likes him. She really cares about him. I know they don't know each other, but you can see it. We have seen their chemistry from the first second these two met. There's something there.
Hot stabbing.
Hot stabbing.
Stabbing. She stabbed him with the staple gun and then got the
icicle.
Ice pick. Yeah, it was good. We have one final moment.
Yeah.
In this which episode.
Is hard to watch. I find this really hard. I find this really, really hard to watch.
Meredith has heard the news about Bailey's patient, Jackson, that all of the organs were lost and that they are waiting on a miracle. And earlier in the day, Mr. Dunn, our prisoner, had asked why he can't just give his organs to this kid. He has a 3-day sale ready to go. You know, and Meredith says, well, you know, you'd have to make sure you're a match. And they did the tests. He is a match. And at this point, Meredith makes a decision. And I think her decision is sympathy and letting this patient have, I suppose, one
autonomy.
Last chance at autonomy and redemption.
Yes, I think the redemption here is the most important part, because I think if it was just about autonomy, it would be I really struggle with this. The moral thing is really tricky because I can't view this storyline without thinking about all of the lives that he took and all of the body autonomy he took from other people. And I understand Derek being like, this, I don't want to give this person something that they took from other people. I understand that Derek has personal issues clouding his judgment and clouding his ability to do his actual job, which doesn't have anything to do with how Derek feels about this patient. And also, this patient isn't the person that Derek's actually angry at. Two separate things. Derek should have been removed from this case straight away.
Agreed.
He's not in the right mind to do this.
He's not being non-biased.
No. Mm. But neither is Bailey.
True.
Yes. And this is this whole dichotomy of things going on in this episode.
Part of me, though, is also like, that man took 5 lives, right?
Yes. And this is why it's,
him
I think this.
Giving up.
My organs. Yes.
I him think giving up and being killed is a waste. Am I saying that corporal punishment should include organ harvesting? Absolutely not. But if they gave you 3 options for how you would like to die, number one, hanging, number two, lethal injection, or number three, be sedated and have all of your viable organs taken out and given to people to start to make some sort of amends for the damage you caused.
Yes, yes.
I think that is a great third option, but in saying that, if we were to give people that third option, you absolutely know that it would turn into an organ harvesting disaster.
Yes, it would. There's so many terrifying.
The world is a terrible place. And you know that the American prison system would make money selling those organs.
Which makes me think if you sign up to be an organ donor and you do go to prison and you're on death row, do your organs get donated?
Not if you use the lethal injection. Mm-hmm. Actually, not if you use hanging or anything either.
Mm-hmm.
Because your cortisol levels would be
it's so killing
high
the organs. Yeah.
Correct. So Meredith kind of, I think, decides to
Well, again, just tell him some medical facts.
Yeah.
Basically, she's playing all she's in the doing. Gray. Of course.
She says,
that's her name.
As part of your surgery, a piece of your skull was removed and put into your abdomen so that your brain could swell and breathe. If somehow that area were damaged, the swelling would increase and it would result in brain death. As your doctor, I need you to be very careful not to damage it. And he asks, are you doing this for me or for the kid? Whatever helps you sleep at night. And then there is a scene which
I cannot
watch. I had at least five times.
Really? I have to close my eyes. And I know it's had to come and I cannot look at it.
To never watch again because the amount of effort that would take. And to be honest, like self-sacrificing that would be required of that. Have you ever seen someone recovering from brain surgery? They can barely lift their head for the screaming pain that fully takes over their being.
Yeah, I have seen that.
So the fact that he was so committed to, I like to think, saving the child in a last-ditch effort for a semblance of redemption rather than going the selfish route of not wanting to die in a prison.
I think it's a two-birds situation because this guy isn't the most selfless. I don't think we can take that away from him, that he's also playing this game with Derek where he loves trying to – him and Derek are in a power struggle.
They are. But – the effort that would take, my soul is escaping out of my shoulders. So no, I can't.
Hard to watch and is a really brutal way to end the episode.
Yeah. So hopefully that's not where next week episode starts, but you'll have to come back next Thursday and find out. Thank you all so much for listening. We can't wait to get on the Discord and hear what your opinions are on the sort of moral gray areas in this episode and how you feel about them. Our Discord and all of our contact details can be found on our Instagram page. And if you feel like doing a cheeky little support, we do also have a link to our Patreon there. But your listens, your likes, your comments, they absolutely support us as well, and we thank you all so much for doing all of it.
Thank you so much. Everyone who leaves reviews, it's just the nicest. It's the sweetest. I love them so much. We really appreciate you guys. Come and have a chat to us on Instagram. We are very chatty with you all. Thank you so much.
See you next time.
Bye.
Do you want to take a silly photo of my silly hair for the internet?
Yeah.
Because I want to take it out so bad.